calling to order the Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Study Policy Committee for this Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. Do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum.
We have great participation today. Thank you for being here. And we do have audience participation today, I think, right?
We have no requests.
No requests, okay. Item 2, minutes. This is the meeting minutes from January 26th, 2023 meeting.
Move to approve. Fine.
Thank you.
Second, Clark.
Okay, we have motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed or abstaining? Okay, for the record, there are none. Staff reports, we're going to go to Director Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for our financial progress report. If you look at attachment 3A, you'll see that we've expended about 40% of the budget. We expect to expend a little more here in the coming months as we send our pavement condition folks out to grade our roads, et cetera. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions? We'll need a motion.
So moved, Gonski.
Second, Judge.
We have a motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any nays or abstentions? Okay, it's unanimous. Next, we have our technical progress report.
All right, so I'm going to go talk in a little bit different direction. I'm a little bit outside of my league here. But I wanted to let everybody know, a couple of weeks ago, guidance came out for what's called the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant. And this grant is through the federal EPA. And what it does is it's very similar to the Safe Streets for All program that we're going to talk about, is that it requires metropolitan statistical areas to do a climate action plan. And if you develop a climate action plan, you are able to then have access to $4.25 billion for potential implementation grants, things like fleet replacement, public service type stuff that you can use. The way that the grant works, though, for the planning grants is that they actually identified the top 67 MSAs in the country and basically said, if any of these MSAs want to do a planning grant, the federal government's going to give them $1 million and say, go do the climate action plan. Akron and the Akron MSA, our region, is the 83rd largest MSA. So we're outside. But along with some MSAs, the states are also allowed to do a climate action plan, and they will just get $3 million from the feds to do that action plan. The calculus is that not every state will take the $3 million to do the action plan, and not every MSA will take the $1 million for a climate action plan. So Akron, we were in discussions with Akron, and we were also in discussions with RACMID, our air quality agency, and Sam Rubens is here. And there was discussion about putting forward a letter of interest from the Akron MSA to potentially get one of those $1 million planning grants to then be able to have access to that $4 billion. Akron has graciously, taken the mantle of to be the lead agency. And one of the things that they wanted to do was asked if we could present this to our membership to find out if there are any interested partners that'd be willing to be coordinating partners with the Akron letter of interest. And so the way this works is Akron will send a letter of interest. It'll identify its coordinating partners. And I believe that's due by end of April would be when they would need that commitment. And then at that point, we would wait to find out if we would, you know, get the planning grant and would work then, your communities would work with Akron to develop a climate action plan, which would then lead to a pot of money for implementation. I think from our perspective, this is something that really we wanted to provide to our communities to see if it was something that you were interested in potentially partnering with Akron on. Emily Collins is here from the city of Akron. She's the mayor's strategic advisor. She's the one that's taking the lead on this. So if you are interested today or want more information, her and Sam are great resources for that to potentially establish some partnerships to move forward. Again, very similar to the Safe Streets for All process, as in it looks at, hey, you need that plan, and that plan gets you access to funds. but at the same time, we know that every community might not want to put their toe in that water. So it really is up to each community if it's something that they want to get involved in and can reach out to the city. And Sam, I don't know from an air quality perspective if there was anything that I left out you might want to add.
No, it was great. Thanks for letting us get the word out to the communities. We look forward to working with anybody that wants to work.
And Emily, anything from you that you would want to?
I think you had already said this, but I'll echo it. The city of Akron is really interested in pursuing the planning dollars in part because the potential to unlock these future funds for things that are really necessary. I know that there are political considerations anytime we're talking about climate, so I can understand that all of you, you know, need to think through this to some degree. But in addition to that, you know, there are funds available to tackle very ordinary things like fleets, updating your fleet, and we are really looking forward to tackling, you know, both of those things. So not just making sure that we are providing the best possible city services to our residents, but also reducing climate pollution. So thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
And one of the things that we do, the 83rd on the list out of 67 is not as unattainable as it sounds, because there are states, we're talking with our friends in Montana and Idaho, who are trying to write a climate pollution reduction grant without being able to use the words climate. So they may not be able to even apply for this thing. And the states are allocated $3 million each, so if Montana's off the table, we're at 70. Idaho, that's 73. So 83rd's not totally out to lunch.
So as AMATS is kind of just helping with this process and, you know, helping identify partners, I think, you know, at that point, feel free after the meeting to talk to Emily or Sam and get more information.
Mr. Ash.
Thanks.
Yeah, just a couple questions. The types of, I get it, you have to have a plan to get the projects. And the types of projects I'm hearing you say possibly fleet replacement, I'm assuming that's going green on fleet.
I think a lot of electrification is in order, yeah.
And then if you get the planning grant, and that opens it up to potential project funding applications, is that going to be open to everybody who sits at this table, or is it only to the ones who partner with you in the application? How important is it to you to have partners?
Very important. I think regionalization is something we're all talking about, right? So it's important to have as many people as possible at the table. Again, you know, if it comes to us, if there are almost 20 MSAs that don't apply, we're going to get it one way or the other, right?
Right.
So it's not that we need everyone at the table for the purpose of showing that we're competitive, but we would like that. We would really like to have everyone participate. And I think it is important to have a plan in place, a climate pollution reduction plan, if you don't already have one, and Akron doesn't, by the way, go after those future funds.
So in the event you get it,
right,
then it would be open to all of our municipalities and townships to make application for
the
projects.
Future funds or the planning grant?
No, future funds.
So that's unclear.
Or would only be, would
I think
only
it'd
be the
be more likely. I think it'd be more likely that you'd be able to get in on the larger pot of money if you participate in the planning.
But you don't know that for certain.
Yeah. And the other part is that the initial $1 million funds are not competitive. The $4.6 billion is competitive, so having a larger coalition will help us access that funding.
And I promise this is the last question. I mean, other than fleet replacement, what other kind of projects might you envision?
So there was greenhouse gas, doing an accounting of what's being put out there. Ways that we can identify that the municipality or entities within the municipality can go green.
Yeah,
so
more commercial spaces, for example, making sure that you are using your commercial spaces in a way that's the most efficient which has other benefits too, right? Energy efficiency isn't just a greenhouse gas reduction plan. There are also all kinds of reasons that you want energy efficiency. I mean, I think about our housing plans all the time. We're going about the use of our ARPA dollars by replacing furnaces. Huge social benefit, right? Having people be warm, replacing windows, things like that has a huge benefit to our residents. But it also has a climate reduction, a pollution reduction.
So it would have been a little easier if they would have just called it sustainability. But
it probably
would have.
I mean, the feds are the feds, right?
Yeah.
But hey, I want that money.
So just one additional question. So it's not just public entities. It's public slash private?
I think we can absolutely fit in. I think some people know them as 2030 districts. 2040 districts are soon to come, right? Yeah, I think we can fit all of those things in as long as we are coming up with a plan for reduction of community and governmental emissions. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you all.
Thank you. That concludes my technical problem.
All right, thank you. This will take us to item 3C, AMATS federal funds report. Dave Fulick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. AMATS is in pretty good shape with our different funding balances. We're a little bit over with FTBG, and we're a little bit under with CASA and CMAC. A couple other things I'd like to just touch on. We have quite a few resurfacing projects that need to sell before the end of the fiscal year, which will be here before we know it. So if you have any issues or any problems that we can help you with, let us know. I think we have about 10 or so projects left to sell. And one last thing, in this summer of 23, of calendar year 23, we'll be accepting applications for new projects again. It'll be probably a similar schedule as last time. Probably CMAC will be accepting CMAC applications in probably June or July, and then we'll be accepting the traditional STBG and TASA and resurfacing applications probably in October. We also have one new funding category, and that is the carbon reduction program. It's not a huge pot, but it's growing because soon we'll have 3 years of 3 years of money accumulated in it. We're still developing an application. This will be to fund similar projects, the same type of project that CMAC funds. I guess any type of project that kind of reduces emissions would probably qualify for this. We currently have about $2.5 million, and like I just said, soon we'll be adding another $1.3 million to that. So we'll keep you informed, and as those applications are developed, and we're still not 100% sure how we're going to administer this, but there probably will be some type of application process. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Anything under old business today?
We have no old business.
All right, let's go to new business. Item 5A, the presentation of the draft fiscal year 2024 through 2027 transportation improvement program. Again, this will be Dave Pouet.
Okay, thank you. It's my pleasure to present the fiscal year 2024-2027 TIP. We've been busy working on this the last few months, and right now it's in the public review process. It'll be available for public comments until April 10th. Just to quickly review what a transportation improvement program is, first of all, it documents all the projects that have federal funds in them in the greater Akron area. The projects that do use federal transportation funds must be documented in the TIP. It's also a tool that's used to coordinate projects between different municipalities, since we work in a two county and part of a third county area. And mostly, and but not least, it's a source of information for the public. The public can review our TIP, and they can see what transportation projects are planned in their area. So a few things that's in our transportation improvement program: obviously highway, bicycle, and pedestrian projects, transit projects, fiscal analyses. We can't spend more money than we receive, or we're not supposed to. Air quality analyses. We don't want our projects to have any adverse impact on air quality. Environmental justice, performance measures, and public input. The funding in our TIP comes from three general sources: federal, state, and local. And the way it's kind of broken down is 11% of it comes from state, 43% comes from local, but that includes local taxes that transit takes in from their sales tax, and then 46% is from federal sources. The way we spend our money by mode of travel is transit receives about 48% of the funds, and once again, this includes their local sales tax. Highway receives about 50%, and bike and pedestrian projects receive around 2%. Looking a little closer at highway improvements, these are tables 2-3 and 2-4 in the TIP. We have over $407 million in highway improvements. Highway improvements fall into three general categories: preservation, operational, and capacity. And of course, preservation is the largest category of improvements that we have in the TIP now. As time goes by, and as traffic patterns change and such, we don't quite have as many capacity or operational projects that we once had. So preservation makes up 84% of the projects in the current TIP. I just want to touch briefly on table 2-4. This is called the State Line Group Projects. You might look at some of these projects and they may not look familiar to you. That's because AMATS still has to show these projects, even though we don't directly fund them. The majority of them are ODOT sponsored, and these are they cannot be regionally significant, affect air quality, they cannot be capacity adding, but they still must be consistent with the AMATS plan. And many of these types of projects are resurfacing projects. Many of them are called district-wide type projects, such as guardrail repair or pavement repairs and things like that. But that is table 2-4. So I just wanted to touch on that because sometimes these are projects you may not be familiar with because they don't really come from our application process. The transit projects, over $396 million are allocated for transit projects. Of course, Metro and BART are the two services that we fund. Some of the projects include replacement of large and small buses, maintenance of equipment facilities, and then the coordinated human services plan.
Sorry, Dave, if I can just jump into the Metro numbers, and part I know they seem big. Those numbers do include their operating expenses, so it's all this. It's not necessarily money that we're giving them. It's money that they're collecting through taxes over a 5-year period. So that's why that number is so big.
performance measures, this is a relatively new thing that we have to do. It's a federal requirement. We have to actually measure if the transportation system is getting better or worse in like seven categories, and then each of these categories have, I guess you could say, subcategories, but the seven main categories are safety, infrastructure condition, congestion reduction, system reliability, freight movement, and economic vitality, economic sustainability, and reduced project delivery delays. So the next step with the new TIP is, once again, we are in the middle of the public comment period, March 10th to April 10th. The final TIP will be submitted to ODOT May 1st. Approval of the final TIP will be by this committee at our May meeting on May 18th, and then the final approved TIP gets submitted to FHWA and FTA on June 30th. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. TIP team at AMATS, I guess, is of course Curtis and Matt, and then myself and Amy Prater. So if you have any questions or comments, you can grab any of us and we'd be glad to help you.
Okay, thank you, David. So this is a motion. We're going to look for a motion for the draft plan program today. So if there's any questions before we do that, please feel free. I know one thing that the agency wanted to make sure everybody looked at all the lists and make sure that there's nothing missing or nothing inaccurate in your community's project. So if you'll look them over for that, they would appreciate it. And any other qualitative assessments you might have, they'd be thankful to have your comments. Any questions at this point? Okay, so we're looking for a motion on the draft program.
I move we approve the draft program.
Moore, second.
Okay, we have Adamson with a motion, Moore, second. Any comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed or abstaining? Okay, I'll make a note that it's unanimous. Under 5B, we have the draft Safe Streets for All action plan for the greater Akron area. This is for discussion only, and Matt Stewart will be presenting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. Here today to talk a little bit about what we've been up to with Safe Streets for All. We're nearing the end of our process. This is something that has been a pretty major effort at AMAT's offices over the last 6 months. We kind of kicked off the study itself in September. We've gone through all the different phases, and now, as of about a week and a half ago, we have a draft report that's available on our website. I believe you were all provided the link to that. So just wanted to walk through a few of the highlights, and then Curtis is going to be talking about some of the recommendations of the plan as well, just to give you a summary of some of the things we want you to kind of look through as you review the plan. I won't spend a lot of time on this because I think I talked about it at the last meeting, but just wanted to highlight that our engagement process was kind of a two-part process. The first part was engaging the public. We did that through an online survey. We ended up with a quite good response rate, just over 300 responses, and included, in addition to that, we had 130 location-specific comments. We had asked people to submit any areas of concern that they had. So that was pretty successful. We also had our stakeholder engagement process. We worked with our Safe Streets for All task force, which is made up of, I think including staff, it's just over 20 people, but some of you are in that group. But through our task force, we were able to amass this list of about 70 stakeholders. We then invited them to a series of focus groups that we held back in November. So we got a lot of good information from that. One of our next steps that we still have to do, which will be later in April, is reach out to our stakeholders again as we share our draft report with them. I think it's chapter 4 is our safety analysis. That's a pretty important key chapter within the draft report. We can kind of break that into two parts. The first part is just the crash analysis. It's similar to the work that Dave and Amy do each year for the annual crash report. This is just over a 5-year period versus a 3-year period, and it's maybe a little bit more in depth at looking at more things within the crash analysis. There's a definite focus on what we call fatal and serious injury crashes, or sometimes you'll hear us say FSI, which is shortened version of that. But just all the details of for vehicular crashes as well as pedestrian and bike crashes, you know, where, when, how, why they occurred, all those details. Second part, and this is pretty important part of the overall plan, was defining the high injury network. So there's kind of a pretty huge asterisk to throw out there. This is, I guess you could call it breaking news. So our staff, just within the last 24 hours, as we were kind of double-checking a lot of things, we realized that there are some discrepancies in how we were classifying serious injury crashes. So within what we were reporting as serious injury crashes, there are some just general injuries, which may not be as severe, that we're getting lumped into that. So for those of you that have looked at the High Injury Network web application that was developed, it's probably going to be changing. And Curtis will get into a few more details on that in a minute, but it is something that we're working on, and I think we have a pretty good handle on where we need to go. I would encourage you to hold off for a couple days before you really get into the weeds of this, but once we revise everything, the High Injury Network web application that Seth has developed, I think, is a very powerful tool that gives a lot of detail, important detail to all of you on where our crashes are occurring and then the specific circumstances of each crash. There's a lot of information that you can very conveniently get from the High Injury Network web application. So, like I said, Curtis is going to go over our recommendations, and then after he's done, I'll wrap up.
Yeah, all right, so real briefly, with what we're talking about with our high injury network, it's not going to change the short-term project recommendations, because the short-term project recommendations all have safety funding in them, or projects that enhance safety that are on the TIP, that this list is going to stay the same. So a short range basically includes every project that is in the TIP, the draft TIP that you just looked at. A lot of the projects on this already have funding in them. Actually, all of them have funding in them. Short range means that it's happening by 2027. And so the positive thing here is that this gives our communities that are looking for more funds for existing projects to apply through the Safe Streets for All program for those funds. The next slide is the midterm recommendations, which we had put, which is supposed to be the high injury network that includes a certain number of projects, and that's what we're unsure about. So we had actually in the draft said 10 FSIs. Now that we're looking at our new set of data that has pulled out quite a bit of crashes, it's probably going to be a lower amount. So the midterm recommendations are probably going to, some of the midterm recommendations might drop into the short term, and some of the short term recommendations might drop off completely if they actually don't have a true FSI crash in them. So that's one of the things that we're going to be working on, is just updating this list. With the midterm projects, what we did was we identified the location and then applied one of the performance, or the, what do we call them, the proven countermeasures. Federal Highway has a list of 28 proven countermeasures. We looked at each of these roadways and said which one of these proven countermeasures fits this problem that we see here, and applied that. So that will stay the same, but like we said, we're working on revamping the list to make sure that it truly covers the FSI type crashes. And then on the short term, again, this is, or I'm sorry, the long term, this is where we, I think I had told our TAC, we had over 600 projects that showed up as a long term project because the way that we were calculating the FSIs. Now that we're pulling crashes out that don't actually meet the criteria, we're expecting that's not going to be a problem for our long term, that we'll have a reasonable list of long term projects. And the reason that we do a short, midterm, and long is because that is how we are directed to do it based on the Safe Streets for All guidance for the program. So we will, as Matt said, be looking to update the recommendations, get them out as quickly as possible. And then we have a task force meeting on April 5th that we would be looking to get more feedback on that and make sure we're good. But then with that, Matt, I'll turn it back over to you.
Did you want to discuss?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the non-project. So we also did, No, you just do it. No, the recommendations, non-project strategies. So these are things that we looked at in Chapter 4, what were the main causes of a lot of our FSI crashes, and kind of pulled out which ones existed: speed, distracted driving, impairment, seatbelts, motorcycles, bicycle and pedestrian, and railroad crossings. We looked to the ODOT's Strategic Highway Safety Plan to get a sense of what they were recommending at a state level, and then we either parroted some of those recommendations and grabbed the ones that we thought fit our region and developed strategies that could be implemented to reduce fatal and serious crashes in our region.
So with that, we do still have a few more steps. Just like Dave mentioned with the draft TIP, we'll be asking for our final approval at the May policy meeting. Before that happens, I think I mentioned that we are going to reconvene our stakeholders probably in mid-April, but before we do that, we want to get back together with our task force. As of today or yesterday, we learned we have more to talk about with them related to this change in data, but we'll be doing that. And then I guess the key thing to keep in mind is that the federal government is expected to release their second year funding announcement for this. So with having this action plan in place, communities will be able to apply for federal Safe Streets for All funding to be put toward any projects that you have that qualify. Most likely that announcement will come before this final plan is approved on May 18th, but I'm pretty confident that you'll have, all of May and into June to apply for that. So that's where we are right now. Like I said, take a look at the draft report. It's front and center on AMET's website. And once we get those issues straightened out with our data, the web application, I think, is a very unique tool to play around with. So are there any questions for Curtis or me? If not, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Under item 5C, we have a presentation by ODOT Capital Programs Administrator Chad Root regarding the Akron Beltway project.
And if I can just introduce, I know a lot of you know Chad from ODOT District 4, but one of the things I know a lot of members have come up to me usually in frustration at one time or another asking, like, what's going on at the Central Interchange? Or why is everything, when is it going to end? And I felt like it would make sense to ask Chad to come and just give a little description of where they are through the whole Beltway project planning, what projects have been completed, which projects are underway right now, and then what does the future hold? Because at some point there will be no orange barrels like throughout the Beltway, I've been told. So we're going to let Chad explain that, how this all works.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of policy. As Curtis said, Chad Rutt, Capital Programs Administrator, ODOT District 4. I oversee planning, engineering, and construction. Curtis came to me a couple months ago and basically said that right there. And I said, so, okay, what do you really want? He said, well, what I want you to do is kind of put together the jigsaw puzzle for everyone on how you guys have made these decisions, what exactly you're doing, and what exactly you're going to do in the future. So I'll give him my best try.
Hey Chad, while you're working on this, I got a question. Have these been like dog years for you?
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it kind of goes fast, I'll be honest, as the projects go. I look at these projects now, and I look at my career path and where I'm going to be, so I actually think it kind of goes fast for me. So I put this up slide first. This was something that came out in 2022. I think it was a new station or something, jokingly put Akron under construction in 2012, and the same thing in 2022. And I got this no fewer than 10 times sent to me, and I am on no social media whatsoever, so it was all people figuring out ways to message me. This particular slide. Okay, so a little bit of history. So in 2000, we did a study. And our study was along I-76, and we went from the Medina County line all the way over the Pennsylvania line on 76. And the point of the study was to look at safety, congestion, and operation along 76. Did this study. And what you can see is the areas in blue are the projects that came out of this study. So the first section you see there is the section of 76 for the Medina line. This is where we added a third lane in each direction through this section. The second project on the list is the first circle there is the Wooster Road Interchange project. The third project on the list was Main Broadway, which was the changes we did within the city of Akron there at the Main Broadway interchange that goes into downtown there. The next one was Spicer Johnston, and that was more of an operational. We got rid of three bridges through that area and still made the connection over on Johnston. And then the next circle there that is still in Summit County and not out in Mahoning County is the Central Interchange. So at the time, it recognized that the Central Interchange was one of the main problem areas as you drive on 76. The problem was that the study identified fixing the Central Interchange at $300 million in 2000 money, which is equivalent, you know, $500 million today. So at the time, we just made the determination that spending $300 million at the time on the Central Interchange was not what we wanted to do. And what that would have been, that I call it blowing up the entire Central Interchange. So you're talking about rebuilding all the ramps, rebuilding all the overpasses through there, and we just didn't feel that was the right way to go. So we pumped the brakes on that one. So fast forward to, I'm going to hit all these just so I can see them all. Okay, fast forward to 2013. So 2013 comes, and we started to do another study. And what we wanted to do is study the operations of the Akron Beltway as a whole. And we were doing traffic and destination studies, looking to see where people were going and where people were coming from. And we wanted to maximize the use of the whole Beltway, use the entire box, okay? So what we saw in doing the study is the people traveling, let's say, up from Canton to go to Cleveland, most of those people are coming up 77, and they continue at 77 to the Central Interchange, then go across the west leg, and then go up 77, the greater percentage of it. What they don't do is cut over on 277, up the Kenmore leg, and then go up 77 that way. So what we wanted to then do is, okay, how can we make that more equitable? How can we make that more 50-50? We don't think there's that much difference to it. But our goal was then, how can we get more cars equitably going around there? Because we think then that they'll travel better, there'll be less congestion, more safety through the area. So out of that, we identified, and you can see the areas in the yellow, the green, and the blue, three separate projects. And that's what I'll get into now. So now I'm going to break this into the two active projects that we have and what they do, and then multiple future projects that we have that also address these issues. Okay, so the Central Interchange. On top of just the congestion through the area, right? I guess what I'm pointing to here is the congestion through the area. So what we look at here is the 76 eastbound movement was related in 2014 was the number 20th ranked congestion area in the state. The northbound 77 right before the Central was number 6. And the southbound on State Route 8 in the Central was number 33. And then, as you can imagine, what often goes along then with congestion, we have higher accident type areas. So this is identified through our central office, and then all the highlighted areas were areas that were identified that were higher in accidents than you would anticipate for similar type roadways. Okay, so now we get to the central interchange and the improvements on the central interchange. So this is the project that you see right now, one of the two projects that we have going on right now that I would call our big projects. And this started out as the first project that we had in this area. So this is a $60 million bridge. And the intent of this project was on 76, you have the two left-handed ramps, the flyover bridges. You got 76 west that goes south, and you got 76 east that goes north, both left-handed ramps. The problem with these ramps is they're both designed to about 25 mile per hour speed to get off there. So what happens is, and it's kind of a, when you're going there, it's not a dedicated lane that drops there. It's a short distance where you have to get in that lane before you then can get on there. But what you have is, with that slow down approaching there, everyone slows down, they get in the right lane, traffic starts backing up, you start getting more accidents. So then the first part of this was, we redesigned those left-handed ramps to go from 25 miles per hour to 45 miles per hour. Now, kind of an interesting story. With our bridge inspectors, the 76 west to 77 south movement, they call that Craftsman Corner. Because for them, they have to go out there and pick up the debris that's on the side of the road, and the trucks that would go too fast, they lose tools. So our guys would collect tools. So that was the first project we had, and that is $60 million. Okay, so we're developing, and that's what you see being built right now, and you see the big piers coming up on the ground, and they're going to start doing deck work here soon. We're 75-80% done with that project in the design process. We're going, getting ready to sell it, and we had applied to central office for major rehab funds, and they had identified the south leg and the west leg for complete pavement, reconstruction, redo all the bridges, and we're like, what? That doesn't put us in a great position, because how do we advance this project? We're very wary of the fact of, or leery of the fact of, knowing there's a little bit of construction fatigue in the area. So knowing if we do the central, then we come back and do this project, you're just adding more and more years to the project. So what we ended up deciding to do was, we did a first of a kind for the state and our district, was we took a design bid build project, and then we created a design build document for the south leg and the west leg, and we joined that together as one project. You can see, and I'll get into the, but it was successful. In the end, the project was $160 million. So this is just, I won't read all these, but at the central interchange, that $60 million project, the primary things we did, replace those left-hand ramps, we're removing the La Follette Bridge that goes over 77, and we're replacing that with a pedestrian bridge. We're also closing two ramps. So the westbound Inman Street ramp is being closed, and the southbound ramp to Lover's Lane is also being closed. And that's more of that operationally. Those in their proximity to the central interchange causes issues. So we were able to close both those down. And then, like any big project like this, the standard stuff you see, retaining walls, noise walls into this area, signing. I think one thing you will see is a little bit different with this project was, with the dollar amount and viewing this as you're not going to come around too often this size of a project, you'll see when the noise walls start popping up, there are a little bit more aesthetic features to the noise walls than what you're used to seeing. There's going to be a golfer, there's going to be a basketball player, there's going to be a canoe theme. There are some other things that we think is a little bit going to be nice for the area. And then on So this is another thing that gets a little confusing. As we did this box, we call it the north side of the box and the east side of the box. When everyone here, we call it the west leg and the south leg. So if I sometimes confuse it. But the basic gist of those two projects was basically, it was just a pavement replacement all through there. Pavement replacement all the sections, redoing all the ramps. One thing I want to point out is, you know, as part of that study in 2013, it identified capacity-wise where we needed more lanes. So with this project, we are adding an additional lane southbound from from Carroll Street all the way to 277. Okay, so right now as you go through the central, you push through two lanes on the central. We're going to push through three lanes there. Now it's not a super wide bridge under there. And we're going to we call it performance-based practical design. So we're actually going to push through the third lane under the existing bridge in there. So if we widen it to standards, once again, we would blow up the central. But since it's such a short distance, we're going to push the third lane through there. We're also adding a northbound lane from 277 that will then drop at 76. So the ramps that come on from Archwood, Wilbeth, and Waterloo will come on as merges, not adds. They'll come as merges in the fourth lane. And one other thing we're doing with this project is we're reconfiguring the northbound off-ramp to Carroll Street. So right now, you come through the central, there's two lanes. You got one coming in from the east, one coming in from the west, and your outside lane drops to Carroll Street. So if you're in this inside lane, you've got a 1, 2, 3 over. What we're doing is making the outside lane still goes to Carroll, but the second lane from the right is the decision lane to go through. So it's a little change that we're doing there. So this is the project, one of the projects you see going on right now. This project is still going to go on until 2025. You're going to start to see the bridge decks go up this year. By the end of the year, the eastbound to northbound bridge, we will transfer traffic over to that, but the westbound and southbound will be a whole other year because of the work we have to do on 77 South. Okay, these are just pictures of renderings of what some of it will look like in the end. This is the eastbound to northbound. If you drive through there, you see this huge pillar in the center of Route 8 right through there. And then I mentioned that we're getting La Follette crossing is going away, but we are putting in a pedestrian bridge that can house the future heritage trail. Okay, the next project. So it's two projects. Not everyone knows that. It's two projects. A lot of construction going on through there, but it's two. So the other one was design build, goes to 277. The next project is what we call the south of the southeast. So you got the box, and on the southeast corner from 277 to Arlington, that's what we call south of the southeast along 77. That project is being built by Kenmore right now. Primary thing that project is, once again, just pushing through some extra lanes, a lane in each direction from 277 and southbound and the northbound. I wrote on the right here, a good thing about this project was it was started in July of 2021 on our Ellis, and what we showed, we projected it would be complete in August of 24, but Kenmore will be out of there by July of 2023. So that's good. We get to get out of there. This is probably, through here we have had more issues than we'd like from a traffic standpoint, specifically with people that want to go north, and they would get on at Arlington. So with the way we were setting up lanes and getting over, there were people that would want to stop on 77 to go around our barrier. It was so bizarre to watch the video, and just very bad accidents through there. So we've done everything we can to make it so they can't do that movement anymore, but we're very anxious to definitely get this job done. Okay, so that's what we're doing in the Beltway area and what's going on in the timeline there. I thought while I was here, I would just also hit on, in September, we got a call that Central Office had the funds to fund the big bridge in Akron over the valley. So that project is actually being let on April 20th. We're in the process right now. We're going through pre-bids. We just had a mandatory pre-bid meeting last week. Quick little story on that. The bridge was actually built in 1953. The bridge is similar to the bridge in Minnesota that collapsed in 2007. Now, after that collapsed and everyone realized why it collapsed, we did go out and do gusset plate repairs. So it wasn't going to collapse for us, but it definitely created a level of urgency for this bridge. So here is an aerial of the bridge. So it's very recognizable, the blue bridge. Currently, three lanes in each direction on the bridge. The future bridge will have four lanes in each direction on the bridge. So for me, the one thing I think about the most is as you're going northbound and you get on at Perkins, you come on in a merge right there. And it's really one of the most difficult merges I think we have. where you're coming downhill pretty good, you're whipping your neck around, and it's tough to get in there. So one big benefit to this project is Perkins will come on as an ad lane and this auxiliary that then will drop at Glenwood, so there's plenty of time to get over. In the northbound in the southbound direction, the ad lane will come on at Glenwood, and for right now, that'll drop at Perkins. So we'll still push through four, it'll drop at Perkins. Couple reasons. I mean, that was those reasons right there were why we did the four lanes. But in addition, whenever we do work in the future, so we have to do an overlay in the future, we have a permitted lane closure chart. This says we have to maintain three lanes on State Route 8 at all times through here. So the bridge is wide enough such that we can always shift all of the traffic onto one side of the bridge and do work on the other and not violate our permitted lane closure chart. So that leads me into how we're going to build this. So unlike the central interchange where you see every day you're driving through it and they're tight lanes and it can be difficult to manage at times, the first 2 years of this are all offline. The first bridge is going to be west, built west of the existing structure. It'll be 2 years of that bridge coming up out of the ground before it's completely built. Once that bridge is built, this entire bridge gets torn down. Half of it will get torn down, the other half will most likely be demolished, and then we will come back and we will do the northbound bridge. So we'll shift all the traffic, and then we take three lanes on each, we'll shift all the traffic, and then we will build the northbound lanes through there. For us, I think it's kind of cool what we're doing here is, through here you have eight railroads, you have a river, you have a trail, we have an unconfined landfill, you see the proximity of the Akron School bus garage through there. So we looked at, traditionally when you build a bridge like this, you have cranes, you got piers, you're picking up your beams, you're dropping them on there. We couldn't figure out a way to conventionally build this bridge with cranes and whatnot, just access roads and where their pick points would be and everything. So in lieu of conventional, we've designed this as bridge launching. So essentially they have two options. They're going to build all their piers, and then behind the structure, they're going to build all their beams out, strengthen them up, and then they're either going to push them hydraulic, jack them out, and then they come, and then they land on the next pier, or they're going to pull them with the same type thing. So, as an engineer, I think that's pretty cool. We've set up for construction while we're building the first structure. We're setting up a camera on the Y bridge so it can observe at all times. And then when we do the second part, we're setting up a camera on, there's a bus garage building that's owned by the school that we're setting up a camera there just to kind of watch if people want to watch to see the launching through there. So we're excited. That project, that will go through, it'll be a five-year project. So this project will go through 28. Once again, just a rendering from down below on North Street. You see we did have a little bit of additional aesthetic type treatments to the piers through there. Okay, so now the future on what we have coming and the next message we get about the construction in Akron. Okay, so one of the heaviest congestion areas is State Route 8, specifically south in the PM peak. And we had a study, and we were looking at low-term measures on what can we do. And they came back, and our consultant came back with several measures that just, they didn't even put a dent in what we would consider the problem, just on level of service ease in that PM peak. So, but they said, well, here's the problem. You can't even analyze this unless you push through a third lane through the central. So short of doing that, nothing you do is going to do anything. You have to push through the third lane. So that's why when the earlier slides, we're doing that with the other project. So we're pushing that through. So that does a little bit. But the second problem, especially in the southbound direction, is Carroll Street is so close to the central interchange. Okay, so Carroll comes on now. You got three lanes coming up. Carroll comes on as a merge. And then you have the central that's right there where right now two lanes go south. One lane goes east or west, so you create all this weaving. And as you create all that weaving, that's what creates the slowdowns, and that's what creates the backup. So how can we get rid of that weaving? How can we stop that slowdown? What we've come up with is a braided idea. Okay, so I'm driving south. Okay, so we're going to push through another lane, a four lane. So right now there's three lanes that come down through. We're going to push four lanes that come through. And remember, three lanes can go through the central. So what we're going to do is four lanes come through. As you approach Carroll Street, okay, instead of going all the way to the central interchange to go 76, we're going to create a ramp right near Carroll Street to get off to go on 76. And on that, you're going to be coming down. The three left lanes can all go 77 south. The outside lane, you'll be in the lane to go on 76, and the second from right will be a decision lane. So you can either go south or you can go 76. So we're separating the 76 and the 77 traffic at Carroll. So then the braid idea comes from, so now you're separating that on 76. From Carroll Street, you'll come over that 76, and then you'll only have a merge onto to go on to 77 south. Now from Carroll Street, 77% of the traffic goes south. The other 23 is split between east and west. What we're analyzing right now is we have two options. When you come over on Carroll, one option is part of it will break off and go to 77 south, and then you can have another lane that re-merges with your 76 traffic. So now you can go in any direction off of Carroll Street. The other option is to not bring it back to 76, to come over and only have a merge with 77 south. And the logic behind that is, if you want to go west, it's no problem to go west, because you just need to cut over on 277 and you're going west. If you want to go, so now you're good there, okay? So we got that covered, other than if you're trying to go to the north side somewhere in Akron. So then you have to worry about the people going north and the people going east. Our logic, or what we're thinking about going north, is you can either go through Akron, go to Main Broadway, go to 59 and catch north there. And then the other people are 76, where they could theoretically go east on Carroll, catch Market, and get on an Innovation Way. Or what we're bouncing around is what we call a Texas U-turn, where you would go over Carroll, up Fountain to Perkins, and then get back on 8 south on Perkins. So we're exploring both ideas right now. The second idea I talked about, we go from a level of service E, slow down 15 miles per hour every single day, to a level of service C, 55, 60 mile per hour flow through there. We're analyzing that right now. In addition, with that singular project, we're going to push through a third lane going northbound through the central interchange, and that third lane will then, so you got three coming around, and then you got two coming from the ramps, so then four lanes will go, and then one of those will drop before Perkins, because we really think it's important that we have Perkins come on for the bridge as an add lane. So that's the 70, that's the Route 8 braid project, and I know that's a lot. Okay, and the last one that I'm going to talk about is the Kenmore Lake. One of the reasons people don't utilize 277 go up to Kenmore Lake is they don't like driving on the Kenmore Lake. It's two lanes, and they don't like driving in it. And the way people drive the Kenmore Lake is, we say it's a giant weed, right? So if you're coming west on 277 and you're going to Kenmore Lake, you're then going to go 77 north. You're conflicting with the people coming east, who are then, you're conflicting because you have to cross over the other direction. So the people coming 76 east are coming up the Kenmore Lake, and then they're continuing east. No one's going 76 east to go up the Kenmore Lake to go as much 77, because they'll probably go 21. So the Kenmore Lake is a giant leap. Well, since the Main Broadway project, we've had the Kenmore Lake in a three-lane condition. So we've tried to maximize what we can do here. Our initial goal was to actually keep it that way, just like it is. But when we ran the numbers, when we looked at the accidents, and we did our projections, two things increased. Serious injuries increased, and the percentage of fatalities increased. So we decided that wasn't the route to go. So we are going to widen the Kenmore Lane. We're going to widen it to three lanes. We're not going to meet 100% standards, but we're going to make it so the shoulders are much more closer to the 10-foot required. We're going to create more pull-off areas to the Kenmore Lane. And the last thing, so now you know all about braids, we're going to probably braid the Kenmore Lake in both directions. So no longer will you have it. The problem with the Kenmore Lake is when you analyze it, it's 1.2 miles, and the analysis says that when you come around, you're fine. You got 1.2 miles to get in your right lane, but it's not how people drive it. People want to get on the Kenmore Lake and instantly get in their lane, and that's what causes the problems. So what the future is going to be is we're going to do the same thing. So we're gonna braid the traffic. So then the traffic does not no longer has to leave anymore. It's just going to go like that on the Kenmore Lake. And that'll all happen kind of on the northern side of the Kenmore Lake. There'll be a braid in each direction.
Chad, will you be able to switch over, though? So let's just say that the one out of 20 cars is coming south on 77 to the Kenmore Lake, and then want to just jump over to Barber Road or something. Will you, even though you're braiding, will you still have a point where you can jump?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. There's still a decision point.
It's just the majority of the cars will be on the correct side.
You'll start on the correct side for the majority, okay. And like that minority you said, that some people are going to do it. I know it's not zero, but they'll still be able to get where they need to go.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good.
So that wraps it up. So that's kind of our how we got to where we're at, what we're doing now, and what we're planning on in the future.
So the orange barrels will be gone in 2033?
No, they have to resurface after that.
Start back on.
Change the color, you can start
right. More of a, like a fuchsia barrel.
So Kenmore Lake is a one-year gap in there, and then they'll come back. Yeah.
Kenmore Lake is that right, 27 to 29?
Yeah, that's where we're estimating. We don't have construction money yet for the Kenmore Lake. So we're working on that. And we have to, before we can go to track and request construction money, we have to have a clear environmental document. And that's the same thing with Route 8. We have to work on clearing our environmental document before we can request track money. So both projects will still be going to the public, explaining our project and what we're doing.
Well, it's very explanatory. normally we just read this in the Beacon Journal, and sometimes I read it and just scratch my head. Something had to have been lost between the engineers and the writers.
It is funny when you interview with them, and I wouldn't see the next day, and it's one line that I'm 1 hour.
So I get the ODOT traffic updates on my computer at work, and that's very helpful. And if not everybody has that, make sure you request that, because I often forward that to other people who might want to see what those updates are. So those are very helpful.
Thank you.
Okay, it takes us to item 6A. This is amending the fiscal year 2023 transportation planning work program and budget to include development of the 2050 planning data forecast. Curtis Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, thanks, Chad, for taking the time today. Definitely appreciate it. We appreciate all of you sitting with us. I know this isn't our usual 20-minute meeting, so I appreciate it. So what we're doing is we are doing our planning data forecast where we forecast projections out to 2050. Our plan was to start it in 2024. However, ODOT let us know that we'd be able to hire a consultant this year instead of waiting until July to get started. The only caveat was we needed to add that project into our work program. So AMAT has the budget in 23 to do it. It's basically just creating a line item that's showing this new product as part of our 2023 work program so we can get the work underway. With that, we are asking for a motion, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I move to approve the amendment.
Bowling second.
Okay, we have Adamson motion, Bowling second. Any questions or any comments before we go to the vote? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed or abstentions? Okay, that passes unanimously. Thank you, Dr. Baker. And then under 7, we do have one item of business. Sam Rubens from Iraq that would like to talk to us about moving lawnmowers.
Yes, thank you. So, hi, everybody. I'm Sam Rubens. You may have seen my name come across your desks. I've met a few people in the room, but this is my face, so it's worth it. We're starting our fourth year of our lawnmower replacement program called Mowgreater 23 this year. And the idea was we identified that lawnmowers create a lot of air pollution, the older ones. So we're trying to incentivize the purchase of battery-powered lawnmowers at people's homes. So if you can tell anybody you want, tell everybody you want. We've got a lot of money this year. I'll get to that in a second. The idea is you register on our website. You can go to Summit County Public Health website, search Mowgreener. We're on there. Register online. We'll send you an email back. Scrap a lawnmower. Get a receipt for the scrapping. Purchase a battery-powered lawnmower. Submit those two receipts, and we'll give back $100. So we're trying to
make the cost of a battery-powered mower about the same as a gas-powered mower. And it also helps if your neighbors see you mowing your lawn with a battery-powered mower because they trust you more than they do the guy in the big box store. You could actually see what's going on. But if anybody has questions about either of these programs, please let us know.
Sam, that's for your entire district, which includes
Summit
and Portage.
Portage County. Any resident of three counties is eligible for the program. And the Ohio EPA, because we have ozone problems across the state, the director of the Ohio EPA gave Akron, Cleveland, Toledo, and Cincinnati $50,000 each to implement this program this year. So it was all VW settlement money, so it's not taxpayer money. We get a lot of that too. But the idea is that we've got 500 spots this year. So please help us fill them. Get the word out to anybody that needs one. Thank you.
Thanks. Yep. Any other business? Okay, our next regular meeting is scheduled for Thursday, May 18th, here at Hilton Garden Inn. We need a motion to adjourn.
So moved, Gansey.
We are adjourned. Thank you.